So we'll start at the end of the parsha. I figured you prepared the whole beginning, right? Okay. So at the very end, there's a section which is called the Egla Rufa. Ki yimtso cholol ba'adama. If a dead body is found in the ground, asher Hashem Elokecha noten lecha l'rishta nofel b'sadeh. So it's dealing with the land of Israel, which there's something obviously which is very sad about this when you read it from the beginning. We finally get to the land of Israel, right? The land asher Hashem Elokech noten lecha l'rishta, the land which God gave you as an inheritance. But the context is one which is then tragic when you find, and the word chol, a lifeless body, one which is at this point devoid of the soul. You find it ba'adama, you find it in the ground, and it also says, where it nofel b'sadeh, it has fallen in a field. Lo noda mihikahu. And you don't know, if you want we could say it broader, nobody knows, who struck this person. So we'll start all over again, and this is something which you're very used to, right? How many television shows, movies have you seen? Starts the first scene, there's a dead body, nobody knows who killed them, so it's a murder mystery. But the first thing that you could do with a murder mystery is you can say, okay, I don't know, and therefore I have no responsibility, and then we can move on. And that's not something which the Torah is willing to let us do. The Rambam in the Mor Nevuchim, and if that's a little obscure, the Ramban quotes him, and this time he likes the Rambam. Generally, when the Ramban quotes the Rambam from the Mor Nevuchim, he generally doesn't like it. Here he likes it. He says that this whole thing about the Egla Rufa is going to cause people to talk about the murder. And the more people that talk about the murder, then it's more likely that something's going to come out. If something's going to come out, so maybe we'll find the person who actually did it. So he sees this as a way of publicity. The Sforno says almost the opposite. He says that the Bnei Aaron are maybe good detectives, and they have spiritual sensitivity. They're like Rebbeim in the yeshiva, and they know everything that you're thinking and you're doing all the time. So therefore, they see right through you, and therefore, having the Bnei Levi there, by the way, I'm just kidding about that. So having the Bnei Levi there are going to be very valuable because they're going to figure out who did it. So therefore, you have almost opposite but similar interpretations. They're opposite in the sense that one is saying that just talking about it is going to maybe solve it, and the other is saying is that, no, we're going to bring in the professionals who are going to be able to deal with it. V'yatzu zikenecha v'shavtecha u'modedu el ha'arim asher sivirot ha'chalal. And then the elders will go out, and they're going to measure. And they're going to measure to see which city is closest, and therefore who bears at least some type of responsibility. Now this is a little strange, because all of us know that it's possible that a murder could take place, and it's not somebody, the culprit is not from the closest city necessarily. It could be the culprit is somebody who's traveling along the road. It could be the culprit from somebody slightly from a further city. Nonetheless, the Torah over here ascribes moral responsibility. I didn't say legal responsibility, moral responsibility. And the city which is closest to the corpse, eglat bakar ashalo ubad ba ashalo mashchabaol. You're going to take an eglat, and that an eglat is going to be a calf which is young, which has never worked, has never been worked. Varidu zikne ha'ir hahi et eglat el nachal etan ashalo yaved bo. It's also to this stream which has not been worked, v'lo yizra, and has never been planted, v'arfu sham et egla b'nachal. And the animal will be decapitated down by the stream. V'nikshu ha-kohanim b'nei Levi, ki vam bachar Hashem alokech l'sharto l'varech b'shem Hashem. And the sons of Levi, who we know better as the Kohanim, who were chosen by God to serve him, they're the ones who bless in the name of God. And all the elders from the city which is close to the corpse, they wash their hands by this decapitated calf, benachal, by the river. And they say, they declare, et adam hazeh. Our hands did not spill this blood. V'neinu lo ra'u. And our eyes did not see it. Kaper la'amcha Yisrael. And they plead for there to be forgiveness. And I'm going to stop over here. So I want to ask what I think is a very simple question. I'm not sure if the answer is simple. So when we read this, what comes to mind as something which is similar or parallel, though not identical? Because if it was identical, then it would be too easy, because then it would be the same, but not identical. Something which is parallel or similar or has a common denominator to what we just now read. Now, I have a couple of things in mind, which doesn't mean that there's nothing else that one can have in mind. And remember, like when you were growing up, they would tell people would say there's no such thing as bad questions. Okay, there are bad questions. And there's no such thing as bad answers. There are bad answers. But there's also good questions that no one's ever asked, and there's also good answers that no one's ever suggested. So, anyone have any thought about something which may be parallel to this? Yes?
Paraduma.
Okay, why would a paraduma be parallel to this? Strange rituals, we have many. We have hundreds of strange rituals. The Seer Lazazel. Egel Azov. Okay, good. Yes. Good. Okay, so let's be a little bit sharper in some of the things that we said. Okay. So everything you said was good, and everything you said was correct. I'm being too nice? Yes, I apologize. Everything you said is good, everything is correct. But let's now first figure out what exactly really is the parallel, or what exactly really is the common denominator between them. Those of us who learn through Sefer Vayikra, with very few exceptions, the main thing about Vayikra, or at least the world of Avodah, the world of serving God through Korbanot, is that it all takes place in the Mishkan or in the Beit HaMikdash. See, what's parallel among the various things that were suggested, even though I did not hear it clear enough, but you'll tell me, yeah, that's what I was thinking, and then I'll say, fine, was that if you think about, you started with the Paraduma. The thing about the Paraduma is, it is some kind of a ritual, but that's why I was trying to, if you noticed, I was trying to drag it out of him. We have lots of rituals. All those other rituals, from morning till night in the Beit HaMikdash, we have rituals. The difference between the Paraduma and all those other rituals is what? That all of those take place in the Beit HaMikdash, while the Paraduma takes place outside of the Beit HaMikdash. Over here, the Egla Rufa, it's not... that's what was interesting, if you followed along the way. On the one hand, it's B'nai Levi, and I told you the word missing was Kohanim, but it's the B'nai Levi who are going to bless the people. So as much as we think of Birkat Kohanim as something which belongs outside of the Beit HaMikdash, that's not really true. Authentic Birkat Kohanim, with Shem HaMifurash, took place in the Beit HaMikdash. It's the Birkat Kohanim outside, which we can get into a discussion, whether it's a Doraita or not a Doraita, fulfillment of a Doraita, but real Birkat Kohanim was in the Beit HaMikdash, and that was real Avodah. So over here it says, you're going to go to the B'nai Levi, the ones who bless the people, and then it says that one is going to turn to God for Kapara. So if we never learned this section before, and I would have said that in the case where a dead body is found and we're going to do something, blank, fill in the blank, and we're going to do blank in order to bring about kapara. What's the best definition of kapara? Atonement. We're going to do something to bring about atonement for the people. So, and now I would then ask an innocent question. Where would you suppose that atonement would take place? So the answer then would have to be, I would assume it takes place in the Mishkan or in the Beit HaMikdash. So over here, then the question comes up, hold it. Everything would lead towards the Beit HaMikdash, but this is not in the Beit HaMikdash, and that leaves us with a question mark. And that's why, again, when we ask for the parallel, the Paraduma is a very good parallel. Because the Paraduma is some kind of ritual which is specifically being done outside of Beit HaMikdash. Now, the other thing that was suggested along the way was the Seer Lazazel. So again, on Yom Kippur, there's going to be two goats which are taken. One goat is going to be declared by using the lots, Lashem, and that's going to be offered in the Beit HaMikdash as a regular offering similar to other offerings. The blood is going to be sprinkled on the Mizbeach and so on and so forth. But the strange thing is going to be the Seer La'Azazel, which is going to be sent outside of the Beit HaMikdash. Which means when I asked in the very beginning, so what's the parallel over here? So essentially, there are these three independent processes which at face value I should have or would have thought should have taken place in the Mishkan or in the Beit HaMikdash. And what we're told instead is that no, this takes place outside. And now we have to go a little bit deeper and ask, okay, so is there perhaps then a deeper common denominator or connection between the three? Somewhere along the way, somebody said the golden calf. Who said the golden calf? Why? Calves. Okay, good. Right away, calves. That's good. Which means the first thing you should think about, and you know what's interesting? Go search for commentaries who make that connection, and you'll suddenly find yourself very frustrated. It's very, very obvious, and it's very... Do you all agree, yes, that it's obvious? It should be there. I'm not saying no one says it, but it's far harder to find someone making that connection than you would think. So let's try again. Rivers. Okay, very good. Of course there's more. That's when B'nai Levi become B'nai Levi. That's when they got their job. That's when they separated. Matter of fact, they got their job as B'nai Levi, and then they're going to become Mila Shem Elai. They're going to become serving God because they committed murder. Now that's where it gets a little bit complicated, right? Because Moshe calls out, who's with me? And they kill 3,000 people. Okay, so let's pause there for a second. Do all of us think that maybe there's some connection with the golden calf or no? Or just the fact that it said calf and calf, is that enough or no? By the way, does the Paraduma have anything to do with the golden calf? A lot. Rashi. What did Rashi say? Where the mother comes, where Rashi quotes of Moshe Darshan and says that the Parah Aduma, Lemadav or Domeh, he says where you summon in the mother to clean up for the child. Where's Rashi getting that from? Or what's, okay, got it from Moshe of Darshan. But what exactly is the point there? That the Parah is a grown up Egel, yes? Or Egla, as it were. Which is also interesting, when somebody dies, it means they're not going to get as old as they would have gotten had they not been murdered. Try that again. Right, if somebody is murdered and then you find them in the field, they're not going to get as old as they could have gotten. So it's interesting that over here, the mother who has grown up takes responsibility for the child. So there is something over here which may be interesting. So far, the Egla Rufa sounds like it has some connection with the Cheta Egel, and now you're going to tell me that the Paraduma may have some connection with the Cheta Egel, so you want to go for all three? Does the Seer La'Azazel have anything to do with the Cheta Egel? Should I speak in Hebrew? Would that be better? Does the Seer La'Azazel have anything, possibly, remotely? Okay, I tried to set that up before. We have the word kapara over here. We have the word atonement. Remember, I tried to get that out of you. We have the word atonement over here. Those of you who don't realize, when do we bring the Seer La'Azazel on Yom Kippur? Yeah? Right, which means this terrible irony is that the Levim who will become the Kohanim, who are going to bring about kapara, their first act of kapara is by killing the people who were guilty of the Egel. And that's how they bring about kapara. But there's something very, very challenging about this. But you took me aside just now. Does the Seer La'Azazel have anything to do with the Cheta Egel? Short answer, what are you going to tell me? Yes or no? Short answer, yes or no? Does the Seer La'Azazel have anything to do with the Cheta Egel? What?
Yes.
You mean to say that as of now it has not occurred to you?
Yes.
Why do you have to tell me this? Aaron was involved in, okay, working hard now, working way too hard. Aaron was involved in the Cheta Egel, and Aaron's involved in Yom Kippur. Listen, slow down a second. The Cheta Egel took place on what day? On the day that Moshe comes down from the mountain with the Luchot. Shavuos Batamis. He comes down with the day that they were supposed to accept the Torah. Yes? the day that they were supposed to accept the Torah. When it says in the Navi that the fast of the 4th and the 5th and the 7th and the 10th will become holidays, days of Sasur and Simcha, it means that there's some kind of holiness and celebration involved in this. What's the celebration involved in the core of the 17th of Tammuz? What was it supposed to be? It was supposed to be the day that they received the Torah. It was supposed to be Simchas Torah. That's what it was supposed to be. Which means they got everything right except for one small point. They were supposed to eat, they were supposed to drink, they were supposed to dance, they were supposed to party, but they made one small mistake. What was the small mistake? Is they danced around an eagle instead of dancing around Moshe Rabbeinu when he comes down with the luchos. Small mistake or maybe big mistake? Would have Levi Yitzchak argued for them or no? They made a little mistake, meaning they did all the right things except they were guilty of Avodah Zarah, Shvichas Dam, Avodah Zarah. But aside from that, they were basically okay. It says, Achlu v'shatu v'kamu l'tzachek. They ate and they drank. And Rashi says, kamu l'tzachek is Gili Arayot. Is Gili Arayot. That's what Rashi says on the Pasuk in Shmot. So what are the things that you're not allowed to do on Yom Kippur? You're not allowed to eat, you're not allowed to drink, you're not allowed to tashir shemitah, which is basically the sins that they did by the Chet Egel are the very things that we can't do on Yom Kippur. Okay, so that... Okay, that didn't occur to you before. You don't have to tell me, right? But it's much sharper than that. It's that on Yom Kippur is when we finally received the luchot, which means the first luchot that Moshe comes down with gets destroyed when he sees the egel, the service of the egel. So therefore, in a very real sense, the Chet HaEgel serves, and I do want you to think about something. There's a whole argument, which maybe we'll talk about a long time from now. There's a whole argument about the sequence of events in Sefer Shemot. If you follow the Ramban, that the instructions to build the Mishkan come prior to the Chet HaEgel, that means on top of everything else, what else did they mess up by the Chet HaEgel? On top of everything else, if the instructions are beforehand. It's not so easy to say it, but on top of everything else, they were building a Mizbeach, and they were bringing a Korban, not in the Mishkan. Which means they were bringing something outside of the Mishkan. Remember from the very beginning I said, what's the common denominator over here? The common denominator for all of these things, of the Paraduma, and of the Egel Arufa, and of the Seal Azaza, what was the common denominator? They're all some type of Navoda, which is outside of the Mishkan, and that's the thing which is strange to us. That's the thing that we should have right away identified. Even if we didn't go any further, that should have been the common denominator over here. What kind of service is this? Which means, again, when you started, and you said that there... that this is a strange ritual, we're full of strange rituals. That's what we do. We do strange rituals. But even among all of our strange rituals, most of our strange rituals that have to do with offerings take place in the Mishkan or the Beit HaMikdash, and what's strange over here is that this takes place. So now I'm just pointing out that the very sin itself of the Chet HaEgel was itself a sin which was, or a korban, which was attempted to be brought outside of the Beit HaMikdash. So on top of everything else, there's avoda, there's kodshim shebichutz, even though all of you are going to say to me, don't work so hard, it's avoda zara. Fine. But when you're going to bring them, you know, put the tab on and all the things you're going to prosecute them as well, for having brought something outside of the Beit HaMikdash. So I'm saying that the fact that there is some kind of commonality over here with being outside, that's what's interesting, because that seems to be the starting point. Till now, everything is clear. Okay, let's try again now. Because the Paraduma is a cow. The Egel Arufa is a calf. The Egel Azov is a calf, which means we have the same animal which is linking these things, so therefore the thing which doesn't seem to easily fit in is what? Is the Seir Lazazel, so that's why you have to go back again and work a little bit harder, and let's try again then. The Seir Lazazel Let's start from the beginning with it.
The Seir Lazazel, first of all, it's problematic. You take two of them. Any of you ever learned the Mishnah that speaks about the descriptions of the two Seirim? The Mishnah and Yoma, what does it say about them? They have to be very similar as possible. So if you look at the Pachad Yitzchak, he's not the first one to say this, but I know Rabbi Waxman likes the Pachad Yitzchak. So if you look at Rav Huttner and the Pachad Yitzchak, he describes them as being twins. Basically twins. Same size, same shape, same age, same everything. So when we think about twins in Judaism, so now let's see which answer you think of. Who do you think of when you think of twins? Yaakov and Esav. Okay. Does Yaakov and Esav have anything to do with goats? How? Because Esav is called Seir. Again, you work too hard sometimes. Esav is called Seir. Yes? Just to make it a lot easier. Esav is identified as Seir. In terms of Machshava from the Pirkei de Berlezer onward, there's this understanding that the Seir La'azazel is something which is, as it were, given to Esav. Which means you take the two, twins, identical, one stays inside, who's going to stay inside? Yaakov Ish Tam Yoshev Aholim, he's going to stay inside, and what's going to go outside? So the Koach of Esav is what goes outside, and where does Esav go? Esav is the man of the field. Esav goes to the Sodeh. Now what else do you know about Esav? What's another name of Esav? Edom. Does that have anything to do with anything else that we've said so far? What? Paraduma, or dam, or blood, or spilling blood, which means that this thing which was the outlier, did you all understand why I called the Paraduma the outlier? Sorry, why I called the Seir Lazel the outlier? Because it's not the same animal, but even though it's a different animal, once you realize what this animal represents, so even though it sounded or it seemed like an outlier, but it's not so far out as it had seemed a couple of moments ago. Did you all follow that? Again? Or no? Esav represents Seir. Esav is called Edom. What else do we know about Esav? Personality trait. Vocation. He threatens to murder his brother. Right? Murder. Which means this idea of killing, this idea of murder, goes right back to Esav. Esav says, as soon as our father's dead, I'm going to kill him. When I asked the question before about twins, I knew that there was a 50-50. Actually, there wasn't 50-50. It was a 90% chance you were going to tell me Yaakov and Esav, but there was a 10% chance someone was going to say something else, and that would have been Cain and Hevel, but they have nothing to do with this at all, because... Oh, except that you have a murder which takes place in a sadeh, in a field, and then you have something else which is interesting. Is you have God over here asking about responsibility. I don't know if you remember, but that's where we started. God asking about responsibility, and what's the answer over here? What's the answer that which is given? Cain and Hevel, what's the answer? A rhetorical answer, which is always wonderful. God loves those. A rhetorical answer, Hashomer Achi Anochi. Incidentally, what's the answer to that question? Yes. Yes. The answer is yes. But instead, God says, the blood of your murdered brother, I added murder, but I like that. The blood of your murdered brother is screaming out of the ground. So I hope that you realize in this whole section over here that we started with the Egla Rufa, we're starting with the murder which is taking place where there's no responsibility, and we can just then go on with our day. Yeah, it's really sad. It's really sad that some anonymous person got killed on the side of the road. This has nothing to do with us. Is this my responsibility? Hashomer Achi Anochi? And what's the answer that the Torah is giving over here? Yeah. Somebody has responsibility for this. Actually, not only does somebody, when I say somebody has responsibility, there's somebody who has responsibility because they actually did it, so then we should stop right there. The only one who has responsibility is one who did it, right? Right? No. What does Egla Rufa teach us? That's not true that the only one who has the responsibility is the one that did it. Let's go take and let's go measure and let's go see who was close by and let's go see who perhaps could have, should have, would have something have done something that maybe could have prevented this in some way, shape, or form, which I hope you realize that it is an absurdity because we have no idea what took place. So how can we measure and say, okay, take responsibility? What's the Torah screaming at us in Parsha Egla Rufa? You don't hear the scream, do you? It's screaming that there is responsibility to be taken. You have to take responsibility. Again, if you want to embellish this a little bit, what I'm telling you right now is something which Rabbi Soloveitchik said, and it's accessible if you want. I can find where it was. Around 1961, he gave a shiur, and I'm not that old, but I heard the recording. And he phrased this like this. What would happen, and this is a Gemara, by the way. He just took a Gemara and he embellished it. What would happen if on Erev Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol has been secluded for 7 days, the Kohen Gadol has been practicing for 7 days in order to serve on Yom Kippur, what would happen if the Kohen Gadol comes upon a meit mitzvah, a dead body along the side of the road? Does the Kohen Gadol say, excuse me, I'm the Kohen Gadol, I can't become Tameh, all the hopes and aspirations of Klal Yisrael are resting on me to go lefnei v'lefnim, to go inside the Beit HaMikdash, inside the Holy of Holies. I have things I need to do over there. He has to go in with the Ketoret and bring about atonement for the entire Jewish people, and therefore this dead body can just wait. Or is the Kohen Gadol obligated to be metameh himself and pick up that dead body and bring him for a place that he could be buried? So the halacha is that the dead body, the meit mitzvah, takes precedence over the Kohen Gadol status. If there's somebody else there, that's different halacha. If there's nobody else there, the Kohen Gadol has no right to leave the person there. Just in case you ever wondered in Judaism, what's more important? Bein adam l'makom, bein adam l'chavero. So I just gave you an example of arguably the most dramatic bein adam l'makom. Basically, the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur, the avoda that he needs to do, and if we'll think about the Ben Adam L'Chavero, so this was the embellishment of Rabbi Soloveitchik, he said, who generally dies along the side of the road? So the words that he used was, the exact word he used, was a hobo. He goes, a hobo, a poor person, somebody that nobody thinks about. So furthermore, what do you have over here? In terms of social strata, you have the single most important person in the Jewish world, the Kohen Gadol, and you have the single most unimportant person, and who's that? This nameless hobo dead on the side of the road. And what does halacha say? That the Kohen Gadol has to be metame himself to the hobo and pick him up and bring him over and make sure that he has a proper burial. Because that's halacha. Now that should tell us something incredibly important. Because again, what we were worrying about from the very beginning is how exactly do we reconcile this issue of things outside of the Beit HaMikdash with things inside of the Beit HaMikdash? And we come to this realization that, you know, going back to the very dawn of history, okay, maybe some of you will continue and we'll learn Sefer Bereishit together. I'm going to ruin the whole book for you. Sefer Bereishit is a book about brothers who don't get along. Okay, that's it. That's the whole book from beginning to end. I ruined it. Sorry. But the first brothers who don't get along, Cain and Hevel, they really don't get along. And it ends up, as we said, with a dead body along in the field. And linguistically, there are connections between that section and what we just now read in terms of the Egla Rufa. Later on, we're going to find that Yosef and his brothers, and maybe somebody mentioned this, Yosef and his brothers are not going to get along, and they're going to see him in the field. Again, the similar language is going to be used. They're going to see him in the field. They're going to say, let's kill him. Incidentally, one of them will be Shimon and one will be Levi, which is quite important. Because Levi's interesting. Levi wipes out a whole town. Shimon and Levi wipe out a whole town because of the way they treated their sister, and then they're willing to kill their brother. I mean, sometimes acts of murder, once you get it into your system, become very difficult to figure out how to use properly. it becomes a really good way of problem solving. So we solve the problem of Shechem. So let's solve the problem of Yosef. And what do they do with Yosef? Well, they take the blood of a seer, of a goat, and that's what they use and they send to their father. Which means the imagined dead Yosef, and by the way, Chazal seem to catch some of this. You have to work a little bit harder, but if you remember when it says that when Yaakov was informed that Yosef is still alive, it says he didn't believe them. Od Yosef Chai, it says he doesn't believe them. But then it says that he looks up and what does he see? The agalot. He sees the agalot, and it says at that point he believes them. So Rashi there says, again, I don't know if you ever caught it, Rashi says, oh, what was, why? Because the last thing he learned together with Yosef was the parasha of Egla Rufa. Now, if you just took that as just like some little symbol, it's much deeper. Egla Rufa is what happens when there's a dead body, is what happens when people don't take responsibility and need to learn how to take responsibility. Which means this idea of the Seir, which is one part of the Yosef story, and the idea of the Agalot, which is the other part of the Yosef story, all work together over here in terms of this idea of brother killing brother, which, as I said, goes all the way back to Cain and Hevel. The hatred of Yaakov and Esav, maybe it doesn't bother us all that much. Why? Because he's the good guy and he's the bad guy, and he's Seir, and he's the Ish Tam Yoshev Ohalim. He is the one which who's La Hashem, and he's the one who's La Azazel. But then what happens when the next generation repeats the same lesson, and now the brothers can't get along, and it's great because each one thinks of the other one is the bad guy. And what does Yosef say? No. Parsha Egla Rufa. There is responsibility. Hashomer Ochi Anochi. I have responsibility. I mean, one of the things, this also, Rabbi Soloveitchik pointed this out, and this is so subtle, even after I say it, you're going to miss it. You ready? Yes? In antiquity, what should have happened if there was a famine all over a region and one small place had food? What should have happened? That small place should have held on to all the food. They should have gotten strong. They should have collected money. And then as all the other places got weak, they should have captured all the other resources, kill whoever they want, and just taken it. And what happens instead? What happens instead is they sell it to whoever wants to come. Oh, you need food? Come and buy food. The way Rabbi Soloveitchik imagined this is that when Yaakov heard that there's somebody in Egypt, and Egypt is morally corrupt, yes? Sari Imenu goes there for 15 minutes and some guy hits on her. Egypt is morally corrupt, and he hears that in Egypt they're selling food to take care of all the hungry people all over, and he says to himself, my God, who in the world taught them the values of Avram Avinu? Who's turned Egypt around? How can Egypt have become a moral place? How can Egypt be a place which has institutionalized the concept of Hashomer Ochi Anochi? Who is this? Who is this mystery person who's done this? Now, we all know the answer to this. And the answer is it's Yosef HaTzadik. And Yosef sends back to his father, Egla Rufa, responsibility. There is responsibility. Should we start from the beginning again? When we look at the parasha of Egla Rufa, it seems very strange to us. It's very strange to have a service take place outside of the Beit HaMikdash. But there's a reason for this. The reason is that murder causes the Shechina to go away. The whole time that Yaakov thought Yosef was dead, he had no Shechina. He had no ability to prophesize. When we're guilty of murder, the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed. When we're guilty of Sinat Chinam, the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed. Which means to look at a dead body on the road should be foreshadowing to what takes place when there is no Beit HaMikdash, because this is the way to go ahead and destroy it. When the Jews were guilty of bringing the golden calf, Gilui Arayot, Shvichat Damim, Avodah Zarah, that's what destroys the Beit HaMikdash. Haraduma, it's outside. The seer Lazazel, it represents the murderous tendencies of Esav, which somehow had emerged years before in terms of Cain and Hevel, and emerges again in terms of Yosef and the brothers. Sinat Chinam is going to destroy the Beit HaMikdash. Here's a service without the Beit HaMikdash. So we look at these three things, it seems that there is a common denominator. And the common denominator is an unbelievable wake-up call that there's holiness in this world, and then we have this wonderful ability of chasing holiness away, of causing holiness to be expelled. One way that we do this is when we cause the Beit HaMikdash to be destroyed. Holiness dissipates. Another way that we do this is we look at a human being who has Tzelem Elokim, and every single human being, Jew, non-Jew, has Tzelem Elokim. And the reason the Torah says, back in Bereshit, that you can't kill somebody, Shofech Dam, how does the pasuk go? B'damo Yishofech, why? Ki B'Tzelem Elokim Asot Adam. You kill somebody, you do that only when you ignored their Kedusha, you ignored their Tzelem Elokim, and when you kill them, what else have you done? You've taken that person who was alive, and you've turned them into a halal. The Rizal points out that halal and chayim are the same gematria. You took a person who was full of life, and you turned them into a corpse. And the Jewish response to this is to stop right there, to take out the rope, to look for responsibility, and to scream and to say, not as a question, but as a statement, Hashomer Ochi Anochi.